Hello?
I was on mute. We were recording late last night, and I went to bed. I couldn't go anymore.
That's an auspicious beginning.
Yeah.
Oh, you cracking a beer?
Yeah. I thought I'd get my beer points.
A little hair of the dog.
Get my awards like Keith. Post a pic and I'm drinking this now.
Yep. The untapped badges.
Yeah, he didn't show up last night.
No cameo appearance?
No. I didn't expect to. He was hammered just by the way he's replying. You can tell he's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, he called me a sexy minx.
Yeah.
On Twitter. He was hitting on me. I said, you better roll some dice before you start talking like that to me, and he never responded, so.
Yeah, he's probably still asleep right now.
Yeah.
Because the friends he was with last night, they own a brewery, or they're brewers. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine what they brought with them. So.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I need some friends like that.
Maybe Keith can hook you up.
Yeah.
When you do your podcast, your drinking dice podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty brilliant idea.
Roll the die.
But, so what is this, episode 16?
Is it 16? I thought it was 15, but maybe I'm off.
We can check. I know it's Geek Brunch Retrocast. I'm sure about that part of it.
It's not any noise.
No. 15, you're right.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Geek Brunch Retrocast number 15.
Yes.
I am Mike, and with me is...
Chris.
Yes, Chris Ivy.
That's me.
Not spelled like Poison Ivy.
Nope.
You add the E.
Right. Yes, has been misspelled many times in my life. I always have to spell it because of that.
Yeah, when I first met you, I had a tendency to want to write IVY just because I like Poison Ivy.
Yeah, pretty much everybody does.
Yeah.
I wish that gave me an in with her, but... That connection with Pamela.
Yeah.
I could be
Pamela Isley.
I could be her sidekick, Pamela Isley and Christopher Ivy.
There you go.
She could wrap me up in some kudzu.
You can eat it.
Yeah.
You can eat those flowers and weeds like you like to eat with Keith.
Yeah, that's actually she might not be happy about that.
Yeah, she actually wouldn't like you.
No.
She prefers the beef eaters.
Yeah. She doesn't want to be chomping on her plants.
Yeah, you're killing her people.
Yeah. I'll have to rethink that plan then. I have to find some other supervillainess to team up with.
Mm-hmm. I started following this, or I joined the group on Facebook called the Charlton Arrow. It's pretty cool. They post a lot of, like, Charlton comics, and mm-hmm. a lot of them are, like, romance comics, and they're just freaking, like, hilarious covers, man. I, like, want to read these so bad.
Oh, yeah, I saw that when you just posted Career Girl romances.
Yeah, I dig these, man. These are awesome.
Yeah, I want to read that story, Nobody Loves a Go-Go Girl. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome.
Romance comics are kind of expensive. I mean, I think they... They're not, you know, real expensive, but they're expensive for what you think they would be catering to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess a lot of that comes down to how old they are at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say. You just have to, it proves that the longer you hold on to something, the better chance of it being worth something.
Yeah.
In most cases.
I love that cover, though, because she's, like, crying as she's go-going dancing.
Yeah. Crying and dancing. Just reminds me of my college days.
Yeah, did you do a lot of crying?
Only while dancing.
Oh. So I went to Ace and I picked up a lot of Shadow books. I got the 1986 Shadow from Howard Chaykin, and I got some of the 20 cent issues. Not many, because they didn't have many.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to the shop, and then some guy was offloading like a lot of his collection, and there was some good stuff there, like that I wanted. Like, I almost have a complete run of All Star Western, except for the really early Jonah Hex ones that mm-hmm. would cost a lot. And I got all of the Scalp Hunter run, you know, after Jonah Hex left the book, Scalp Hunter became the lead character.
Oh, okay.
Picked up a bunch of Superboy, Legion of Superheroes books. And Werewolf by Night. I've never been interested in that book, but man, it had some like Mike Plugart, and I wanted to check it out. It looks really cool.
Is that a shop near you, or is it down in Elbert?
Yeah, it's my shop. He's really good about acquiring collections. Like, a lot of the other shops in town, they don't give a shit about back issues, you know?
Yeah.
Or he tends to want to go for Golden Age and Silver Age and get stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, because it's close by. I can get some good books.
Yeah, that does vary from shop to shop, whether they really want to put the time into having a back issue business. But beyond just the back issues they end up with from stuff that they didn't sell, you know, where they'll actually acquire stuff.
Acquired a large collection of American Flag, but unfortunately it wasn't complete. I didn't get like 1 through 6, which I really wanted, and there was a couple of issues at the end that I didn't get, because I didn't realize how long the run was. It's, you know, over 30 issues or so. But I'll fill that in eventually.
Yeah. Now, you were in Albuquerque last weekend?
Yeah, yeah.
That was your last of several cons in a row?
Mm-hmm. I got a Valiant Award. They kind of gave me their banner or sign, their booth banner.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I had followed them to 2 cities and supported their books and went to their panels and asked a lot of questions.
Wore their t-shirts.
Wore their t-shirts, yeah. They're a company that I really like, and I hope they succeed, but I'm really curious what's going to happen now that they're blowing up their line, you know?
Well, at least it's not super aggressively.
No, it's very slow, but
yeah.
I think a lot of the Valiant fan base is like all or nothing, man. I mean, they
mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people that just pick 2 titles.
No.
They go all in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've been doing. I didn't jump on immediately, and then I saw how good the reviews were, the first few issues of XO, and I think Harbinger was the second one to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I scooped up the issues I'd missed, and then ever since then I've just been pre-ordering everything they publish. And I mean, I haven't been disappointed by a single issue I've read, so I mean, basically, I'll keep buying everything they put out until, you know, I start to feel like they're publishing something that's not top quality. But I just, you know, it reminds me of when I was younger and, you know, the Marvel Universe continuity was tight enough that you kind of knew where all characters were at any given time, and they only were really in one place at one time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand Marvel's just not in a position to do that anymore with the amount of stuff that they publish, but because, you know, Valiant's small, it's just a really nice, tight continuity, and I feel like they're being really careful with the talent that they're hiring and making good decisions.
Yeah, they're hiring top talent, and I would think that's got to be very stressful because the talent that they got, they sell a lot of copies, and, you know, Valiant still doesn't sell a lot of copies. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think they have one book in the top 100. But I think they're consistent. Like, you know, wherever they're landing around 14, 15 or wherever they land, it's more of a straight line than a Marvel or DC book that just continuously drops.
Yeah.
So people stick with the books.
Yeah, and I wonder how that the sales figures they're getting, if that meets what their expectations are and if that meets them. Because I know, you know, for some small creator-owned stuff, 15,000 can be a really, they can be really excited about that. Or at least satisfied with it, so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you know, obviously there's the company behind that, but it's a company that obviously is, you know, just putting out comics. It's not like, you know, where Marvel's owned by Disney, etc.
Right.
So, I don't know.
But I bought an Aaron Campbell page. I really like Aaron Campbell's art, and I'm really into the pulp books right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people shit on Dynamite, but man, I'm really enjoying it. You know, a lot of the podcasts I hear a lot of people say they don't like it, but I think they do a really good job with the pulp stuff. Like, and the art that Aaron Campbell draws is just amazing. So I have my second page. My other page is Drew Moss with Daryl in it from Colonize, which is also another good book because it's in an area of or a genre that I like.
Mm-hmm. Do the people that criticize them not like the quality of the books that they're putting out, or they're just not interested in the properties? Although, like, because obviously they do a lot of public domain.
I think
characters.
They complain a lot about the art, and I don't think the art is bad. Like, I enjoy the art for the most part. Like the artist in Green Hornet, you know, Mark Waid's Green Hornet, and I really like that book, Miss Fury. Like, a lot. Like, I like that one. And The Shadow's, like, my favorite right now. But I even like, what they're doing with Battlestar Galactica. You know, I've always liked the classical better than the new. Even though the new was so popular, I still like the classical Battlestar Galactica storytelling that was more straightforward sci-fi, at least in my opinion, than the new one, which had a lot to do with religion to me, you know. In some sense,
definitely very different tones, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I also liked it, and I watched the entire series of that. I didn't watch Caprica, but I did watch BSG. But I want to get back into Buck Rogers. I want to start watching those again, and maybe talking about them here because I have the discs.
Mm.
And I want to see if I still hold up because when that show was on, I just loved it, and I loved all the characters.
Yeah, I thought of you when I was looking at previews, last month's previews, or well, it's still this month, but it's almost July. But anyways, that Howard Chaykin, Buck Rogers.
Yeah, from Hermes.
Figured,
yeah. On top of that.
Yeah, I figured you'd be all over that.
I really like Howard Chaykin. Like, I don't know, like, I'm real picky about my art, I think. I mean, like, story means more to me than art, but there's certain artists that I just freaking, like, can't get enough of, you know, like Jack Kirby and Aaron Campbell and a couple others that Keith Giffen. I dig his art a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Very different styles. I also like Jeff Lemire a lot, you know, and mm-hmm. Matt Kent. I really like Matt Kent, like when he's doing his own thing, like in
mm-hmm.
Red Handed and Mind Management. That stuff's awesome.
Yeah. I like his stuff too. Yeah, that's one of the things that's kind of interesting. Like, I think of myself as a story person when it comes to comics, but if it's a good writer, but the art is really, really bad, and not, like, I'm not talking about just in the style not being something appeals to me, but that it's actually poor sequential storytelling, you know?
Yeah.
That can really break a book for me, but if it's an artist, like, it's one of my top artists that I really love, I might be able to enjoy it just for the art, you know, and even if there's not much of a story.
Right.
So it's interesting how that is the case, even though I would primarily think of myself as someone that seeks out the stories, you know.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause art to me can grow on me. The story usually can't, but
mm-hmm.
I'm usually in the mood for what I want, so I don't usually complain too much. Like, man, there are sure a lot of people I hate in DC right now. God damn. I like that villain month is like just really offended a lot of people, and I think it's actually cool. I see some of the creative teams and the characters that they're gonna focus on, and I'm excited because I've always told you I like when they explore things that are not like mainstream, you know, not Superman, not Batman, not Justice League, and their whole focus on all these, some are A-list villains, and but there's a lot of B and C-list villains that they're doing stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it. Like, I know it's extra, like I could do without the hologram covers, but I'm very curious to see what they look like in my hand, so...
Mm-hmm.
And it's no different than if I buy IDW or Marvel from my perspective anyway, because most of my Marvels are $3.99 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do the digital. Like, I give away them on, when I do read them, I give them away.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I got to do the Age of Ultron. I got to give those away.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not excited about it. But I had already stopped buying new DC prior to the whole Villains Month being announced, so it wasn't a factor in my decision. You know, like, I just kind of lost interest and decided the titles that I did like, or the creators that I did like on current DC stuff that I could eventually catch up with and trade.
Yeah. And if you hear good things, then you could buy the whole damn omnibus.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there are definitely some issues I have with and some things that I feel uncomfortable with about the new different news that's come out of DC from different people. But I agree that people tend to go overboard, and some people, I think, spend more time
focusing on the negative than the positive.
That's where I realize that sometimes you just have to back away, like put down the internet and back away slowly. You know, it's like, I love the internet for connecting.
It's like people thrive on, if you hate, like, let's say you hate something,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people are latching onto that hate, they like thrive off of it. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's like a bunch of hornets around a nest or something. Somebody puts out some honey and says, God, that really sucks. And then it's like, you know, like, God damn.
Yeah. I mean, I do enjoy conversations that are actually constructive about things that are problems or maybe that you're not enjoying. Like, on like, say, on the forums or on the Taylor Network page on Facebook, where it's an actual discussion of why something's not working for you, and it's not just about this sucks, which is not saying anything, you know? But
The other thing that bothers me is when they say they make it so they make a statement, and I know the intent isn't to. It's basically to say, essentially, I don't like where the direction they're going in, but the way it's worded, it makes it. Makes it feel like you're an idiot for liking it. That's what I hate.
Yeah, which that's definitely wrong. I try not to do that. I try to be careful how
like,
I word things.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to avoid that. I don't know if I'm always successful. But I try to avoid that because I even know myself, I've, you know, eventually I realize that eventually I might be through some changes in myself or in what they're doing, I may be at some point back into DC, you know, and buying monthlies from them again. So
I tend to be more tolerant too, because I buy so much. So like there's times where I don't fucking feel like reading DC for 2 weeks and I don't, I don't touch it. And then I'll read some stuff and I feel like some Superman, or I feel like doing it, and I dip my toe in, and I enjoy it. I mean, I always enjoy to pick something up when it's fresh, and I change moods a lot. Like, I'm in that Legion thing, and the Legion mode and pulp right now, but who knows in 2 months what I'll be into.
Yeah.
I go through the romance comic phase. I don't know. It's just... Like, I really want to read that romance comic right now.
No, I guess I'm kind of the same way too, because, you know, not long after saying, you know, not long after not reading any Marvel or DC whatsoever, besides, you know, a little bit, besides the Kirby stuff and a little bit here and there of old stuff, you know, now all of a sudden I'm just really super excited about Marvel, and I'm really getting into current Marvel stuff. So
yeah, I have the Marvel phase. I'm not in the Marvel phase right now. I haven't read hardly any Marvel except for it. I finished Age of Ultron just because I heard a bunch of controversy on the last issue, and I wanted to understand what the controversy was. But
yeah,
I thought it was pretty good overall. I thought it like it was a very slow crawling start. Like you can summarize the story in like two sentences, and then it sped up, and I thought I really enjoyed it, like for what it was. And I even liked the outcome. I thought the outcome was pretty cool, even though I don't read one of the universes.
Yeah, I actually set the whole event out basically because the way that they were publishing it made it really easy to do that. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to, what I would think about it in the end, kind of just wanted to sit it out and wasn't really concerned about spoilers or anything. So I just, you know, read what happened. I saw a good article that talked about Bendis events and how Age of Ultron and the way that it ended isn't any different from any of the other events that he's done since Avengers Disassembled. How none of them really wrap up. They all kind of tend to, like, he kind of just tends to mess everything up in terms of, not in a bad way, but in terms of, you know, throw everything out there and create a situation that creates a bunch of conflict, and it just kind of tends to lead into new stories. And that's how Age of Ultron was, and that's how events they'd done previously were. So it sort of made sense to me.
Yeah.
But, and I also wasn't sure, at first it really sounded to me like it was just a separate alternate universe story that didn't really have a ramification on the main universe. Where the truth kind of seems to be in between somewhere, but
It had some cool moments. Can we spoil it? This is a retrocast. But the one thing I liked was the Galactus thing. I dig that.
Mm-hmm.
I could care less about the Angela thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, man, she's never been like, yeah, she was in Spawn and it was cool in Spawn, but, and she had her own series for like 4 issues, but what else, you know? There's not a lot of Angela stuff.
She's a retro character, so that's how we can tie
it. Yeah, that's how you tie it. They're bringing back Angela.
Yeah. To me, I feel like that her whole appearance is just all about Marvel maintaining a good relationship with Neil Gaiman. You know, because Neil Gaiman and Tom McFarlane had that long legal battle where they finally settled. And Gaiman ended up with the rights to Angela, and I feel like he just went to Marvel and said, you know, do you want to use this character?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was more about saying yes to him and maintaining a good relationship with him as a popular creator and author, you know, because his name has definitely spread out beyond comics because of all the novels he's written and stuff, and he's made you know, a whole new fan base out in that world beyond having done Sandman and stuff. So he's like a crossover kind of person that I'm sure they want to have a good relationship with. So it's like, you want us to use this character? You want, you know, sure. Cause maybe that'll lead to him doing some other stuff with Marvel, you know?
Yeah. It's probably to keep his character too in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
If I was Marvel, though, I would make him sign something that said something like, if I ever want to reprint your shit because it's in my Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever book, I can do it. I don't have to, like, edit her out or get more permission to reprint the stuff that she's in. I might not use her again, but if I ever want to collect the volume, I'm not going to cut and paste that out.
Yeah. Hopefully they have done so.
But yeah, Marvel's getting some good buzz. I mean, they're getting much better buzz than DC is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing things totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I hope that Villains Month does good, because I think it's I like when they do stuff that's not mainstream. I mean, that's outside the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm a villain guy. I really am. Like, some of my favorite Flash issues just barely have Flash. they have like Captain Cold the whole issue, or, you know, and some of my favorite Batman comics are the same. They're like focusing on the Penguin or Clayface or Ventriloquist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not that I want DC to fail. I'm concerned that their tactic of making every September a gimmick month of some sort, how long can they do that before it starts to fail? You know, I wonder if this will be the time or next time, or, you know, because they obviously had the New 52, which is a success, and then Zero Month was not as much of a success, and then now they're doing the Villains Month, and, you know, is that yet again going to be less of a success than Zero Month? You know, the way that people are talking about it seems possible, you know, just gauging, like, general interest from people.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are not, like, I know for a fact, like, Keith and Daryl are not going to get any books. Well, Keith is going to get, like, if it's got Jeremy Hahn's name, you know, some creator he loves, he's going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So he might get the Jeremy Hahn ones, but he's not going to dip his toe. So it'll be a cheap month for him. And then Daryl's not going to get, I think Daryl said he's not going to get any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm the only one that's going to get them all. But I'm a DC fanatic, so I'm a loyalist no matter what they do. I mean,
Yeah. They
can shit in my cereal and I'll still be okay.
Well, and that's one thing that I'm realizing with with reading a lot of Marvel again is no matter what, you're always going to have some kind of a bias or affinity towards stuff that you grew up reading, you know?
Yeah.
And no matter what changes, I mean, I may take breaks from Marvel or, and I might, you know, one of the reasons I became so fascinated with DC and with, especially retro DC was it's so new to me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up reading it. I grew up seeing it around in the shops. And so there's some familiarity there and some lingering curiosity, but, it satisfies a different need. Whereas, you know, I did grow up reading Marvel, so there's always going to be that nostalgic connection. Because when I was young and these were the things that made a strong impression on me. These were the first comics that I saw, you know?
Yeah.
So, but, Marvel's tactic seems to be less aggressive. I mean, they're not dumb, you know, they're not doing like DC with the New 52, with the Zero Month, with the Villains Month. I mean, it's just that their whole line for that entire month, you know? There's, if you don't want a villain comic, then, like you said,
don't buy it.
Doing then, well, but you're going to sit out the whole month. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like whereas Marvel has Infinity coming up as an event. There's still some books.
The Infinity.
Yeah, you can sit out Infinity, and there are some books still that you might buy because they're not even if a lot of the books are relating into it. There still are actually some.
Well, they're having two events at the same time. They're having Infinity and the Children of the Atom or whatever mm-hmm. X-Men thing.
Yeah, so it isn't a lot. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but there may be some books like, you know, Daredevil, Hawkeye, things like that that might be exempt from both of them, you know?
Yeah.
And it all depends on your interest, you know? So...
Yeah, if they would have done something like a week five thing, it might have been better. So it's like you have your regular stuff, and then it's the fifth week, and then we could publish a villain book or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the extent that it is, but I think it's going to be cool. I like the bad guys. Bring on the bad guys. That's a that's a retro saying.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. I'll be looking to see how it does.
So we have a few questions. We had some from last time, but I don't know what I did with them. Like I remember one of them was like this from Chuck, Savage Chuck, and he said something like, "Could I whistle the Harlem Globetrotters cartoon song?" And the answer is probably not. Like I didn't watch the Harlem Globetrotters that much. I saw them with Scooby Doo and stuff, but I never watched it. Like I saw the Harlem Globetrotters in person and stuff, and I know the main ones like Curly and Metalark Lemon and the stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember it goes something like, you know, but I don't remember what the cartoon did.
That was pretty good whistling.
And then there was something to do with the Doom Patrol, but I can't remember because it was 2 weeks ago. And the thing that I hate about Facebook. And I got to get better at, like, cut and pasting stuff, but
mm-hmm.
it's like I can't bookmark anything. Like, I sure would like to bookmark things and then be able to search the bookmarks. And if there is a way, let me know.
Yeah.
I can make something, like, stand out, but then I'd have to scroll and scroll and scroll until I could find it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes it hard for me is... I guess if I post it on the Geek Brunch podcast page, it'll be easier for me to find. But sometimes I post it on both. And when I do that, I fill my damn timeline pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
As you can tell. But so it's really hard to find stuff on my page. But
I know because I've tried to find something on your page before.
Yeah,
you know, I remembered you posting during that day, and it takes a while of like scrolling through #naked super women to find.
There you go, usually Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe I got to better do a cut and paste. Because sometimes I say any last-minute questions or something, and it comes in after we recorded or we're done, you know.
Then
I was like, oh, shit, I forgot. And I didn't save it. But there was something about the Doom Patrol. I even remember. I don't remember what it is. But the two ones that we have now are... if given the chance, how would you make a comic book series based on Big Jim universe characters? I think that's directed to me because you don't even know Big Jim, do you?
No, I mean, my answer to that would be I would hire you to help me.
I think they're like a G.I. Joe kind of knockoff. Like, before there was G.I. Joe, like...
Right.
When I was a kid, G.I. Joe was a dude with a beard. And... Yes. Big Jim's pack was like G.I. Joe is now, like a bunch of dudes that had skills and they would go on missions and save people or whatever. I don't know how you would try to make it distinguishly different from a G.I. Joe book, because they had the whip guy, they had the arrow guy, they had the guy with the silver fist that can... you know, knew Kung Fu really well, and then they had Torpedo Fist, which is the most popular, I think. He looked like Popeye with a torpedo for a fist.
Nice.
I don't know what you could do anything different than G.I. Joe, but it'd be interesting if I got that job, what I would do with it. Because I would try to make it... I don't know. I'd take it into the pulp area. I'd make them in the 40s. Fuck it. I'm tired of the pulp era coming into the present day, so I take it into the past.
That actually is a good idea in terms of distinguishing it from G.I. Joe, because that's the problem. I mean, people at this point are more aware of G.I. Joe, so I could feel like, you know, if a comic company came out with a Big Jim comic, they would think that it was a ripoff of G.I. Joe.
Yeah,
they didn't know the history. So if you made it actually take place, you know, in the 40s or something, because G.I. Joe's, you know, nowadays it's everything's kind of been brought forward to the present, you know.
Right.
So.
And I kind of like the present stuff. I'll talk a little bit about it. Like, it takes the pulp and then takes it in the present. Like Miss Fury is a pulp character, but she exists in three timelines. Like, I don't even understand how she exists in three timelines, but she exists in the 40s and then the future and then our current time, and it's very strange, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shadow that I'm reading from Howard Chaykin, it is very much into the present day, or at least what was 19... What was this done in 1986?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I was a junior high school. Good Lord. The next question is from Chuck from Star Joe's. And he said, would you be willing to do a Brave and the Bold show, the old comic where Batman would team up with someone else? He says, say please. Yeah, if he comes on, we'll do one. I have a lot of Brave and the Bold. I don't know if you could get a hold of a few or so, but...
I have a couple. I just have a couple, but... yeah, that would be... That would be a fun thing to spotlight, and especially, as you said, if... Because I know we've mentioned at times trying to have Chuck and Ryan, even if not at the same time, on the show, and... So it would be awesome if we could both do that and have him on for it.
Yeah, that'd be very cool.
I think I can't remember if I talked about it here or not. No, it might have been an issue of because I have a couple Brave and Bolds, and I have a couple DC Comics Presents from the same time period. I think it might have been a DC Comics Presents that I talked about on.
Uh-huh.
Show. Yeah, I think it was Superman and Batgirl.
But, it's very very similar, but.
Yeah, and the issues I have are both from around the same time, like 1980, I think.
Yeah. I have a lot of both. Could do a team-up episode and even take on some Marvel team-up. or Marvel 2-in-1 with the thing. That'd be cool. That'll give us a variety of books we could cover.
Yeah.
So if you don't have this, you can do this.
Team up special. And that would be especially appropriate to have guests from a different podcast on, because mm-hmm. that would be a team up.
A team up in itself.
Mm-hmm.
G.I. Joe Danger Girl, except that's not retro.
Right.
But it was really good.
So if it was somebody from Star Joe's, does that make us Danger Girls?
That's not a bad place to be, my friend. Nah. I wouldn't mind being a Danger Girl with those girls.
I did actually find... I found... I think last night when you asked about for questions for us,
mm-hmm.
I did find it on your page.
Oh, no, but wait, which one? Well, tell me what it is. Go ahead and read it.
So there was one from Donnie Salvo.
Uh-huh.
What was our favorite era of Justice League?
Okay. Detroit. No. It was the satellite era for me. But it's because I was so impressionable when I was reading that. Like,
mm-hmm.
for me, it was like awesome because it was like when I was a kid, I wanted books that had the most characters in it because I felt I was getting more for my money. It was a weird thing. It was like, oh, if I could get 10 superheroes in one book, I'm doing good.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of hard to say because I didn't grow up reading any Justice League. The first Justice League I read was some Grant Morrison Justice League. Was the first that I checked out, the first in a couple trades.
That was a good run. I mean, that's one that stands out as one of the better runs to me. And something I understood and didn't go all crazy shit.
Yeah.
I liked the Kevin Maguire stuff and Keith Giffen and DeMatteis.
Mm-hmm.
But that was for a different reason. That was more for like, I want to know what these guys are drinking tonight. I want to know what they're moving in the GLA embassy. What box are they moving? Why is LaRon doing this? You know, it was like, it wasn't because they were going to fight some good action-packed adventure. It had its moments, but it was more for satire and chilling out with your buddies. One of my favorite issues is when Guy Gardner took Ice to a porno. I mean, that was hilarious. I can't believe he did that.
It's like a... what's it called? The De Niro movie. Taxi Driver.
I never saw Taxi Driver. Never saw it.
Oh man, you would like it.
Did he take a girl on a porno?
Yeah, he's not a real well adjusted dude, and he takes a girl to a porno on a date because he doesn't really get that it's weird, I guess, or something.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. No, you should definitely check it out. Yeah, I mean, I feel like since checking out Morrison JLA over the years, I've definitely gone back, and there's a lot of different eras that I enjoy for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think...
Mark Waid's run was pretty cool. It was very mm-hmm. short, but it was good.
Yeah. So we also had... From James Johnson, what was the first comic you remember reading? For me, it was New Mutants number 2, and I've loved the New Mutants and X-Men ever since.
And that one I think we've tackled before.
Yeah.
Indirectly, it might have not been asked like that, but...
Real specifically, but, you know, it's interesting, though, because I started doing this project that's been really interesting for me. I know it's a website that I know that I've mentioned on the show before, but Mike's Amazing World of Comics, which is just such an amazing resource for comic books. And what I've been doing has been going month by month through Marvel comics that came out back when I was a kid and figuring out which ones I owned because I don't have them anymore. And at some point, I think I might start, you know, buying back my old collection. A lot of it is not expensive, so it wouldn't be too much of an issue. But, and I know I've talked about on the show how the first comics I ever read were in 1986. I was 7 at the time, and they were all early on in my collection, all just made up of stuff that, you know, 3-packs that my parents would buy me. So I don't know exactly the first comic I read, but I know it's one of a few different ones. But when looking at Mike's Amazing World, the one that actually has the earliest publication date is actually, let me see here, Daredevil. Let me get the number right. I think it's 235. Yeah, 235. It has Mr. Hyde on the cover. And it's actually, I didn't know this until looking this up, but it was actually penciled by Steve Ditko.
Wow.
Some of his later work where he worked for Marvel again for a little while before disappearing. And it was written by Danny Fingeroth.
It's a cool cover. Mr. Hyde looks intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been interesting going back and checking some of these out because it makes me realize why I got so fascinated by comics when, you know, Steve Ditko drew one of the first comics I read, and one of the other ones that might have been the first is one I think I've talked about here, which is Avengers 273 and then Thor, I think 373, something like that. That was actually drawn by Walter Simonson. So when you got names like that exposing you to comics, it's hard not to become a comic book fan.
Yeah, when I got exposed, I didn't have any covers, so I never knew the numbers, and I didn't bother to read the little copyright notice in the corner, you know, in the front page of every book to see what number it was.
Yeah.
Because we went to the dump and they used to throw away comics. And I think my first comics were Archie books. And then there was Spider-Man and a lot of Marvel stuff. Not a lot of DC. And if it was DC, it was like those ones that were reprints. Like they would reprint the old stuff. And like DC tended to do a lot. And I remember my first one I bought was Ghosts. And I enjoyed that, even though it was a horror comic. And then the one that really sucked me in, the arc that sucked me in, was a Defenders run, which had the Defenders being defeated by the Serpent Society. I can't remember if they're the Serpent Society. It was like a Hydra group, but I forget what they're called. I should look it up real quick. But there were 3 issues. And I fell in love with, like, Yellow Jacket and everything because it was like all the Defenders were defeated. You know, Hulk and Nighthawk and all of them were defeated. And you had Son of Satan show up. And I was like, who are these guys? Why does this guy have a pentagram on his chest? And I was like, man, it's just awesome stuff. And it sucked me in into continuity. It was issues. It was called the Sons of the Serpent. They wore, like, green outfits. They were kind of like Hydra, but or Cobra in the DC world. It was issues 22, 23, and 24 is the one that I loved, and 25. I had gotten those issues off the spinner rack, like back to back to back, and I was afraid I was going to miss an issue. But it like opened my eyes to all these B-list characters. It had Luke Cage and the Hulk and Daredevil and Valkyrie and Doctor Strange and Nighthawk and Man, it was great.
Yeah, that, you talk about trying not to miss an issue. That's one of the things that's come back to me doing this project, going through these old issues, is just how I would have random issues. You know, I had, there weren't a lot of runs that I had earlier on because I was pretty much dependent on, you know, what I would end up getting in these packs. And, you know, I was only 7 when I started reading comics, so I just kind of read what I ended up with, and I didn't have money of my own to go buy stuff, so what I had, I read several times, you know, and I think that's why one of the ways the way I'm doing this is just by recognizing the covers, you know, and I'm sure it's not 100% accurate, but it's amazing what I remember because I looked at these covers so many times, you know.
Oh yeah, I have very distinct memories of every cover. Mm-hmm. Early on my age, where now I can't remember them.
Yeah.
But the ones that are impressed, you know, that I remember from my childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what I did was, so I got a handful of comics that way in 86, and then it was a couple years. I've just really just had those for a couple years, and then I got a few years older, and I think it really was in 1989 where I would have been 10 and started out hanging out with a friend of mine who was a big other collector when I was a kid. And what we used to do is you could walk through the woods near his house to a gas station, and the gas station sold comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for a couple years there, pretty much when I started to have an allowance and stuff, I started to buy a bunch of stuff whenever we could walk up to the corner store. And then, after a year or two of doing that, I think is when we started getting our parents to give us rides to comic book stores.
Yeah. Yeah.
Popping up.
It was a drugstore for me, like in my neighborhood. That was it wasn't that far of a walk, but at the time it seemed like a long walk when you're a kid.
Oh yeah.
But that's where I got a lot of these books. And then I think it was in middle school, so it was quite some time after that. I was just getting books whenever I had money, or if I had mowed mm-hmm. lawns, I'd go get books. And I didn't like say I have to go get this. It was whenever I had money, or whenever my parents said, let's go get a book. I need to go pick up a prescription or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Go pick one comic off the spinner rack. That was like a nightmare. How do you pick one out of 100? Like, there's so many great covers, and it's like, what if I pick a dud? I don't know. It's like,
yeah.
The stress it would give me. You know, here's 20 cents. Go get a comic. But there was that. And then in middle school, I remember the thing that really created a monster in me was I went over to one of my friend's house, and I didn't know he collected comic books. You know, I thought I was one of the only ones that did it. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, nobody ever talked about it or anything. So I went to his house, and I went into his room, and he had these boxes. Like, I don't even know what a comic box was, right? And yeah. I was like, I just put them in the bed. I didn't even put them in a bag. I just stack them. Mm-hmm. And he had boxes of comic books all bagged and boarded. I'm like, what the hell are these? And then I like opened the box, and I was like, there were like titles I just never knew like existed. And they were all in sequential order. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Where do you get these comics? Because they don't exist in the drugstore. And that's when like they had direct, you know, to comic shops and stuff.
Yeah.
And then he told me about and I said, no fucking way, a whole store that sells comic books? And he told me about this paperback store that just had comic books and paperbacks. And I went there, and I was like blown away. It was like it created a monster. I was like, I have to get all these titles. And then, you know, I'd get my parents to drive me there. And then I started to get back issues. Like, I remember I couldn't believe that back issues existed. Like, I was just blown away that there were boxes of back issues, and there were like the champions and stuff. And I was like, who is this Hercules dude? Why is he with the guy with the flaming skull? and a woman in a black suit. You know, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I remember picking up all the champions, and it was a good time. Yeah. And then it was like, from that point, I was not just a reader of comics or casual reader or whenever I had money, but I became obsessed.
Yeah.
From that point, it was an obsession, and it's been with me my entire life.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think we found out that comic shops exist just by either I saw or one of my friends saw, just saw one, you know, and
yeah.
realized, you know, they had obviously like the posters and stuff in the windows. And so then we wanted to go there. And I think by going to the comic shop, that's what, it wasn't until then that we were exposed to the idea of really collecting them, you know, because when we go to the corner store, it was just whatever was there, you know, we gravitate towards certain things. You know, it seemed like early on, just because of what I had ended up with from those three packs, I was familiar with Spider-Man and the Avengers and Captain America. And then a couple years later, when we started going to the corner store, I think is really where I got more into, because when I look back, I always think Spider-Man and X-Men, you know, but that's kind of what developed once I was collecting them. And I think what really, I had the fortune of picking up an issue of Classic X-Men. I think I picked it up because Wolverine was on the cover. It was number 39.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reprint of X-Men 133, where it was part of the Hellfire saga. And Wolverine is, it's the issue where Wolverine is infiltrating by himself, and he comes across a bunch of the, you know, the Hellfire soldiers. In like a warehouse area, and he's fighting them by himself.
Yeah.
And so even though it was, you know, 89, I was reading actually something from earlier X-Men. And I think that's where the germ of, you know, being a big X-Men fan. And that issue also had, because they had the original backup stories, it had an original backup story that was drawn by Jim Lee, some of his like earlier work.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really fascinated with his art. So once he started to pop up and doing regular, like Uncanny X-Men and then X-Men, you know, I was all over that.
Yeah. So I like started in the 20-cent books when books were like 20 cents. That's when I started getting them casually. And then when I became hooked, I think they were 60 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like a big gap when I became hardcore, you know.
Yeah, I think 75 cents were where they were at when I started, and I think they were $1.25 once we really got into it, because, you know, that was kind of the beginning of quick exponential price increases.
Right.
The
other book that I want to point out to me is like, that was a big book. So I mentioned the Defenders, and then I mentioned all the miscellaneous covers that I never knew what the hell they were. And then was the Flash number 234. Like, I must have read, this was my, you said you read like the Wolverine with Mr. Fix-It and like a gazillion times.
Yeah.
I must have read this comic like 25 times, and I looked through it like more than that. You know what I mean? I just kept looking at the art, and it had such a striking cover, in my opinion, because the Rogues have always been one of my favorites. And it has like, they're in the Flash Museum, and they have like, it has like Captain Cold there, Pied Piper, Captain Boomerang, and Heatwave. And the curator is walking in, and he says, "Impossible! How could the Flash be struck down by wax statues of his deadliest foes?" And he's like in his museum, and he was taken down by the Rogues. And during this time, it was awesome because you'd get a Flash story, and then you'd get the, you know, 8-page backup of Green Lantern. So, because he didn't have his own book at the time, so you get Hal Jordan. It was great.
Yeah, for us, definitely the Holy Grails were Todd McFarlane, Spider-Man. We were all about those. And a lot of them, I mean, when we started going to the comic shops, it was right at the end of his run on Amazing. So obviously once, you know, he launched the adjective-less Spider-Man, we were all about that, but we, you know, we would go and we would spend a few bucks on new issues. Then otherwise, you know, we would save our money, and then every once in a while, because, I mean, McFarlane was so hot then, we would, the shop that we went to was really super small, so most of the back issues were back behind the counter. So you kind of have to ask for a specific, like if you had a specific issue in mind, but we always wanted to just kind of look and make a decision. So we always got the guy to bring out a long box,
yeah,
you know, of the range that we were interested in. So we would always, and it was always those McFarlane Spider-Man issues. And some of them, even at that point, were out of reach, but we would save up our money and just to get a single issue. And I think, you know, because I remember, I think it was the Hobgoblin was on the cover of one that I picked up. I think it might have been 312. But I think even back then, I remember spending like $13-14 for it. And that was like a huge, yeah, 312. It was just, that was a huge amount of money, but it totally seemed worth it to me.
Well, Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah.
How much did you pay for it?
I think $12 or $13, but I could be wrong.
Me and Barb always laugh at the Valiant explosion. The 90s were great. I mean, for innovation and things just blowing up. There was a lot to explore. Like you said, Spider-Man, McFarlane took off in the 90s, his own series. It was 90, like, and then the Valiant stuff, but I think I joined Valiant like when the Unity thing started, and I got into Shadow Man and some of the others, kind of like you got into Valiant, like current. But the prices of the old stuff, like the things that were just a few months old, were outrageous. Like the speculator market and the insanity of how collectible these things were in the Valiant universe, and there weren't a lot of them. Their print runs were low, and she bought me, I remember distinctly, she spent $100 buying me a Magnus 12. And man, I worked hard to get them. Now I have a full run, but I think that book is like you could get for almost cover price or $10.
Yeah, it's I think I've said I had a couple of Valiant comics, but it just, as a kid, you know, 10, 11 years old, we just never really got into them that much because the cost was, you know, just so prohibitive, you know.
And boy, did I used to love to read Wizard back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was like a Christmas catalog to me. Mm-hmm. I would read it from page to page, all the different interviews, what's coming out, all the different stuff.
And we took Wizard at the time as kids, we took that as just straight up truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they said creators were hot, you know, we looked at the price guide and we figured that's what things were worth. And
well, they controlled a lot of the market, like what happened. I think they were responsible for a lot of what happened to Valiant early on.
Yep. Yeah, and it was just, yeah, we were definitely always, I mean, that was just a part of the regular purchases, is just to make sure you got the new issue of Wizard along with your comics and stuff. Other than that, it was just, you know, our shop always put the comic shop news in. And that was the only way we figured out about stuff, because, you know, we still didn't have the internet, so.
Yeah. My database says that Magnus 12 is now $18. But that was the first appearance in Valiant of Turok, and it like, exploded. The other one that was really hot, which was expensive, was Solar number 10, the tall black cover, the Alpha and Omega storyline. But, yeah, it was, man, those are great comics.
Yeah, I'm looking at Amazing Spider-Man 312, some places are selling it. The range, it ranges anywhere from like $5 to $20, depending on the shop. So, depending on where I got it from, you could get a lot cheaper. But most of those McFarlanes, it's still like you're still going to spend like five
or more, yeah.
Five or more, and then 300, you know, still is way up there. We wanted 300 so bad, even back in the late 80s, and there was just, it was only a couple years old at that point, but it was just not going to happen, even back then.
Yeah. Luckily, I jumped on to, I don't know why I jumped on, because I was always more of a DC fan, but I had jumped on to Spider-Man really consecutively around, like, right when McFarlane started. Like, I kid you not, it's like, bang, I was there.
Yeah.
I was a fan of Michelini. Like, I like what I like everything he wrote for Spider-Man. He kept that book moving. Like, it was a fast-paced book. There's always stuff there.
He stayed on way after Image launched and, you know, his artists left. I mean, he stayed on to 370-something, I think, way after I stopped reading it. But, yeah, it was just a matter of timing. Like, we you know, those McFarlane issues were coming out on, like, you know, I was just a little too young and wasn't going to the shop, you know, because by the time, around the time that Eric Larson came on the book, it was basically my favorite comic. And from like 330 through like basically through 350 or so when he moved off of Amazing and picked up Adjective List from, again, from McFarlane. Uh-huh. You know, I had a subscription. It's the only comic I ever had a subscription to. I just wanted to make sure I got every single issue and didn't. We never had, like, a pull list or anything when we were kids. We tried to get our parents to take us to the shop in time to get the issues that we wanted to, especially when the Image books first started coming out. I mean, there was just so much hype around it, and we were just so obsessed with making sure we got to the shop to get Youngblood number one.
Yeah.
And good luck figuring out when those books were going to show up at the shop. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, but that was awesome too. Like, I was excited for all that.
So, I was so excited. I mean, I don't even think, you said Michelini, like, I don't think I even understood who Michelini was until later, because I was just so focused on the art.
Yeah, back when I was reading Michelini back in the day with Unknown Soldier, like, but I didn't know it was him when I was a kid. I didn't pay attention who the creators were. I just knew there was this guy with bandages on his face.
Yeah.
But, I've been reading Michelini for a while. I tend to like him a lot. Like, even today, I find his books very entertaining to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of it was our age, but I mean, I knew creators, but I didn't really know writers. Besides maybe one or two, I knew the artists, and it was all about the artists, and it was all about, especially the artists that could draw like sexy women, because you know, that middle, when I was
yeah,
in middle
school. You had that swimsuit issue, and you're like, hell yeah.
I mean, McFarlane and Larson's way that they drew Mary Jane, and like Jim Lee, the way he would draw like Psylocke and Rogue.
Yeah,
definitely was a part of my puberty. So,
yeah, we took a long time on that question. I guess we could probably keep talking about it.
It's like, it's the memory train to nowhere. You just start walking down that memory lane, and you never know when you're going to come back home.
That's right. I think when I was a kid, art mattered a hell of a lot more. Like, And then as I grew up, I think in the night, when I think toward even early on, like it wasn't until like Valiant came where my focus totally shifted the other direction. It's like the story mattered more, and then from there on out, I've been pretty much the same. But I was happy that when, for some reason in my college years, I don't know why, I went on a Jack Kirby kick and I just bought like everything when it was really affordable. That was fun time too.
Yeah, I know for me, after, I think it was because after I took a break from comics after the first year or so of Image while I was in high school, and then you know, by the time I had, by the time I got back into comics in college, 6 or 7 years later, you know, I had done a lot of reading and gotten into literature and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when I started picking up like comics, then I still had appreciation for good art, but I was definitely a lot more focused on writers and good story and stuff like that. So that's where that kind of change came from.
Yeah.
But no, but that old stuff, I mean, it makes an impression on you. I was just reading Superior Spider-Man, and I was like flipped out because Cardiac made an appearance, and you know, like I had memories of reading him in Amazing Spider-Man. Like he was in a storyline that Larson drew. And just, it all came back to me. Seeing the character again. So.
Yeah, it's, I could talk about this shit for days. But yeah. I do want to, now that you mention it, maybe, I don't know when we can do this, but it would be interesting to, if I reread those Defenders issues and you reread, you know, those issues of Daredevil and stuff that you talked about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm putting together a spreadsheet and I really want to start rebuying some of these comics that I used to have since I was not smart enough to hang on to them. But
all right, do you want to jump into like miscellaneous books and then
sure.
We'll finish off with Kirby?
Yeah, sounds good.
I don't have a lot more than I have two. I read a lot more Legion, so I'm almost through the Legion Lost hardcover. And it's weird because I like it a lot, but I don't like it nearly as much as I liked the Darkness Saga. Like the Darkness Saga sucked me in. This is cool because they're literally in a place where they don't know how the hell to get back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's interesting is they think, I got to the point where they think they're being rescued. Like they think that the other legions have found them, like Element Lad and Lightning Lass and all them. And they might be called something different because this is the time that they renamed everybody's names.
Right.
So I might not get the names right. I'll call them what their most popular name is. But yeah, they that was the most interesting, and I think the one of the main hooks of the story is they think they're getting rescued, and it turns out to be that Saturn Girl was emulating like everybody, like even Phantom. Is her name Phantom Lady? In this one, her name is something else. God, I can't remember their names because of the name shift. But she was dating a Ultra Boy, and she was using an image of her out of her mind, and she had emulated the rest of the Legionnaires and being rescued, so that like the whole Legionnaire team now is just so fucking pissed because they're like, she got their hopes up high and then dropped the bomb on them, so they're still not going to be rescued.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, but it's kind of like It's a lot like Battlestar Galactica kind of thing.
Hmm.
They're trying to search for Earth, or trying to search for the way back home. And there's a handful of them, and Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad's relationship is going down the toilet. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it, but I don't like it as much. And there's two artists that are in this book. I think Koipel gets most of the credit, but I tend to like the other guy. And I don't remember what his name is, but he's got like a scratchier art style. His name is Pascal Alike, who I've never heard of. Mm. His last name is literally spelled like A-L-I-K-E.
Okay.
Or X-E, Alexi. It's an X, not a K. It's pretty cool. I'm kind of wondering, like, if it's gonna have more of a bang or more an impact on me as I finish the last three issues, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when I read it, I didn't have anything to compare it to, really. You know, it was my first exposure to Legion, so I remember really liking it, and I think I don't know if that was the first time I saw Koipel's pencils too, but I remember liking those a lot too. So I know it read really well, you know, as a first time Legion experience kind of. How many issues do you have left in it?
Three.
Okay. Yeah.
So you've read it and you remember that when Saturn Girl kind of dropped the bomb on him? she was like projecting that these people were really there, and the only one that kind of knew something was kind of strange was Brainiac, of course. He would always question some of their behaviors or stuff, and then it's weird because she was projecting onto Ultra Boy's girlfriend, like she was faking him out. There was a scene in there where she was hugging Ultra Boy, like romantically, because she felt, I guess she had some feelings for him being that voice for a while. And it was weird because in Legion and the Darkness Saga, she did the same thing. She caused a rift between Lightning Lass and, God, I can't remember. A Karate Kid, I think. Mm. Or no, Timberwolf, sorry. There's so many Legionnaires that it... Timberwolf and Lightning Lass, she caused a rift between them because when they were stranded out on an asteroid and Lightning Lass arrived, she saw Saturn Girl hugging Timberwolf. And I'm like, man, Saturn Girl is really, like... effing up relationships left and right.
I get the impression that Abnett and Lanning's Legion was very, what's the right word? Dedicated to the Levitt's run, that era. You know, like. As different as they made things by changing code names and stuff, that they sort of balanced that out by calling back to certain things in the classic Levitz era, you know, different themes, and then kind of taking an updating storyline, like doing new versions of storylines and stuff from that era. But yeah, I mean it led to me reading the Legion series that they did, and continuing to read Legion when Wade started writing it. So,
yeah, like
good enough to get me into it.
Like Shadow Lass is Umbra, like, and then I can't remember. Did they do a roll call? Oh, Apparition is her name, but that's strange. She's the one that can phase through walls and stuff, like Kitty Pryde.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom Lass, or that's the one that I'm usually with the name, but this name, Apparition. And then, like, Lightning Lad is Livewire.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it's funny until you started reading this, I forgot that they did that with the names, actually, because, I mean, I went the opposite direction. I got used to those names, even though I think I did know that they were different, but it wasn't much of an adjustment for me. And then with Wade's run, I think, is when they... I mean, it was a new continuity again, but I think he went back to using the old names. So I actually adjusted in the reverse order, but now I've gone back and read some old Legion stuff, so I'm, again, more accustomed. So I actually kind of forgot that Abnett and Lanning's run used, like, more superhero-y names for them rather than, and got rid of the whole Lad Last thing.
Yeah, it was bizarre for me because I just don't know them like that. But mm-hmm. and I have trouble, like, switching the names, like, you can tell. I'll review the next three in the probably the next episode, and I'll be calling him Lightning Lad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna say Livewire. I just won't.
Yeah, that's probably why it didn't stick ultimately. Because I mean, a lot of times, like, your Legion people that buy the Legion books tend to be people that have been fans of it for a while. You know?
Yeah, I
get stuck for a little while, but.
I am a fan of that Shikari, though, that alien that they encounter initially, like in issue one. I became a really fan of her because she's like, there's an innocence about her that I really like. And I like how she always tends to call them like Green Legion or Clear Legion or Brain Legion. You know, it's crazy. Dark Legion. She doesn't call them by their names. She's almost like me.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
I could tell her like a gazillion times, call me this, and she just won't do it. She just won't do it.
Yeah, I think, and she's a new character, I think.
Yeah, she was new, and the other character that, because I'm not familiar with this era, is Monstrous, which is like the strong arm, I guess, of the Legion at this time. She was like, she just looks really ugly, and she's strong. She does look like a monster, mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's a cool. I hope to finish this one up for the next issue, the next episode, so I can tell it how I like the whole series as a whole.
Yeah, actually, this is interesting. I just came across. So I was trying to remember what Monstrous looked like, and there's a note actually, or there's a quote here from Dan Abnett saying that. Monstrous, I guess. So they didn't create her, but she was a fairly recent character, like Zero Hour era, and first appearance 1996 in Legion of Superheroes number 82, created by Tom Pyre, Tom McCraw. So Dan Abnett says that she was deeply unpopular, and they would get letters demanding that they kill her. But him and Lanning actually liked the character, so they tried to make her a more like appealing, interesting character in Legion Lost. So that was kind of interesting. But yeah, I remember, you know, it was got good reviews, and I was pretty fascinated by it, and I hadn't really been reading. Hadn't been exposed to too much like sci-fi stuff, or well, I hadn't been reading much that fit into that category at the time, you know. But it reminded me, I guess, the same part of me that got fascinated when I was a kid with Silver Surfer, you know. Every once in a while, it's like you know, Legion. There's superhero aspects of it, but then there's also very sci-fi aspects of it, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good. So what do you got?
Well, in the interest of a segue, speaking of Silver Surfer, I continued on with my journey toward the Infinity Gauntlet and read Silver Surfer 37 and 38, as well as Thanos Quest number 1. And I read these on Digital Unlimited again, but I installed the app on Kara's iPad. Mm-hmm. So I just want to report that I actually had a pretty good experience reading them that way. I think I had said that I tried it on my iPhone and the issues were taking a while to load, and I don't know why that was, if it was me or if it was the system or what, but I didn't really have that issue reading these, so that's cool.
What is the monthly cost on that?
I think it depends how you subscribe. I think if you subscribe a year at a time, it works out to only like $5 a month. But
do they have current stuff, or is it just old stuff?
Yeah, they update it with current stuff, not stuff that just came out, but I like 6 months old, I think. So, not that old. They have been starting to add some of the early Marvel Now stuff recently.
You know, if Marvel did that, like, did it everything, like, in their library, and, like, just had an offset of, like you said, 6 months, like, I think they could give Comixology a run for their money. Because, like, for $5 a month, and then you can read what you want, and if they got their browser up to speed.
Well, it's actually, I mean, that's kind of what it is now. I mean, they've had it for a long time, but they only recently added the iOS app. But now that they have the iOS app, I mean, you can read most comics that come out if you're willing to wait 6 months. And they don't have everything, but they're still adding old back issues, too. And there's a lot of stuff on there already. It's a pretty amazing deal. You know, I think it just all depends on what you're... I mean, I know there are some people who don't buy new Marvel issues and, like, read them 6 months later. And it looks like they're adding most everything they publish, but just, like, 6 months late.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they figure the people that are going to buy it and want to read it sooner are going to get it through Comixology or a shop, people that want to own it, you know. So anyway, Silver Surfer 37, we pick up where Silver Surfer is still wanting to investigate and find out more about Thanos. So he heads to Titan, one of the moons of Saturn, I believe, where Thanos is from, and finds his father, Mentor, and Mentor's other son is also there, Eros. Does he go by Star Fox? Is that his?
He's the one that could, like, persuade people.
Yeah.
Powers of persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Avenger for a while.
Right, right.
I never liked him.
He's not ever been a big favorite of mine or anything, but we also, I think it was last issue, we saw Drax the Destroyer being resurrected because his whole existence is basically at this point tied into Thanos and being a... like a weapon against Thanos. And he shows up as well, and he's basically in, like, stupid Drax mode. He just keeps repeating "Where's Thanos?" over and over and over again. And
just like the cover.
yeah, that's basically the cover, and that's basically his dialogue for most of the episode. I mean, the issue. To the point, I guess he kind of honed in on Silver Surfer because Silver Surfer had been near Thanos recently, so that was able to give him some kind of, like, a residue that Drax is able to hone in on. So he's fixated on Silver Surfer to the point that they end up battling a bit, and Silver Surfer is trying to get rid of him to the point that he flies into a star, and it doesn't, you know, knowing that it wouldn't harm him, and it doesn't harm Drax either. So it ends kind of on a funny note, because Silver Surfer's trying to ponder how to get rid of Drax. He remembers his encounter with the Impossible Man a couple issues ago, and how he supposed to be trying to have a sense of humor, so that gives him a more creative solution to the problem. He takes Drax to Earth, and Johnny Storm lets them into a room at the at Baxter Street and at the Fantastic Four headquarters, Silver Surfer and Drax sit down and watch TV, and like there's just several panels where you can tell they're watching TV for a really long time. And then eventually Silver Surfer, just like once Drax is pretty like zoned out into watching TV, he like gets up and disappears. So I don't know how that worked, but it was kind of an amusing ending.
Yeah. Man, you're getting me hungry for reading this stuff, though.
It's good stuff.
You're tapping into stuff that I didn't buy. Like, I didn't buy the Wolverines, and I didn't buy the Silver Surfers. I read Infinity Gauntlet,
yeah,
but I didn't read a lot of Silver Surfer.
Yeah, these issues are by Jim Starlin, and Ron Lim is the artist, and I liked Ron Lim's art on these as a kid, and I still really like them. I still really like his art. 38 deals with Thanos is a little bit more present in this issue. He goes after, I don't really know much about this character, Captain Nebula. It's a female, and apparently she, from Thanos' dialogue, apparently she's been claiming that she has Thanos' blood in her, which he disputes. But basically he kills her, takes over her ship. And then Death shows up to ask him what's taking so long on his mission to wipe out half the universe. So he kind of explains, like, look, I found this Infinity Well, and it's leading me on this quest, and I need to amass more power before I'm able to fulfill your quest. Then Thanos and Silver Surfer battle for a while, because Surfer catches up with them, and Thanos is more interested in getting on with his mission, so he ends up fooling the Silver Surfer into thinking that he killed Thanos, and takes off, basically. There's basically like a little blurb at the end of the issue telling you that to check out Thanos' Quest 2-issue miniseries for his mission. So I went right into checking out issue 1 of that, and this was more of like a prestige format book, but same creative team, at least writer and penciler. And Thanos Quest basically deals with, like, directly leading into Infinity Gauntlet, it deals with Thanos searching out and collecting the Infinity Gems, and number 1 deals with the first 3 gems. And that's basically what it comes down to. I mean, he goes from place to place. In this issue, he collects the Soul Gem, the Power Gem, and the Time Gem. It kind of picks up in where 38 was at, where he explains to Death about these gems, which at this point he's just calling them all the Soul Gems. And Death gives him the permission to seek these out to complete his mission. We get the first inkling that Thanos actually has ambitions beyond Death's plan for him, that at some point he's actually wanting to amass his power so he doesn't have to work for Death, so that he can be his own power. He goes to the Nexus of Reality to find the In-Betweener, who's imprisoned there. In-Betweener being like a cosmic being that's a mix of chaos and order. He gets the Soul Gem from him. All these beings, they have the Infinity Gems implanted in their foreheads. And in all cases, like Thanos uses some kind of like a combination of power and deception to get these. Like he comes in the facade of helping the in-betweener escape his prison, but once the in-betweener is outside of his prison, he's in just the main nexus of reality. Like chaos and order are balanced there, so he doesn't have any power because he thrives on chaos and order being out of balance. So Thanos is pretty able to pretty much make quick work of him. And he gets the power gem from a guy named Champion on a planet called Tamarada. And Champion's kind of like a Hulk smash sort of dude. So Thanos doesn't have much trouble like outsmarting them. And then finally, he gets the time gem from a being called the Gardener.
I remember him.
So, yeah, he...
Aren't those guys like, called, like, Celestials or... I think so, yeah.
They're definitely...
Because like, they're like a certain breed, because the Collector's one of them. The Gardener, mm-hmm. all those weird characters.
Yeah, they're, like,
The Elders or something. I think they call them the Elders.
Like, they're sort of mini gods in a way, you know? Yeah. So I'm assuming...
It's Thanos Jim Starlin ripping off Jack Kirby.
One thing I... Jim Starlin definitely does a good job, though, of, like... And Ron Lim, like, especially when Thanos is traveling to... the nexus of reality. It's just there's these sequences of pages that are really like tripped out, and the one page has like 9 different panels, 3x3, and it just shows Thanos's face every time, and Thanos's face gets like warped and decayed and destroyed, and it's just like simplifying his process of going through these layers of reality to get to this place that hardly any being can make it to. And I don't know, they do a fascinating job of conveying these like cosmic journeys in places that don't exist, only exist in their imagination, you know. It's pretty cool. So I guess so. I'm assuming that number 2 is gonna show them getting the other 3 gems, you know. So good stuff. It's worth going back to and get myself all ready for.
Yeah, I was just looking up that book, and I don't know if my database is correct, but those issues are worth a lot.
Are they?
Well, it's hard to tell. Mine's a conservative database, like compared to Overstreet.
Yeah.
But it has 1 and 2. Like, 1 is $27 and 2 is $37. Wow. They're supposed to have acetate covers or acetate overlays.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I just looked them up in where I normally shop. And number 1 in Very Fine Near Mint, there's 1 copy for $25. And then another place has 2 copies, $35 each. And then only 1 shop is selling number 2 for $25.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're definitely nice. I think I had number 1.
Whereas those Silver Surfers you could grab for like $1 each or...
Yeah, they're real cheap. Yeah. But, yeah, because I don't think I ever got my hands on, back in the day, issue number 2. I wonder if I even read it all. I'll be able to tell. I know I'm almost positive I had number 1. I have no idea what happened to it, unfortunately. But, yeah, they're nice books, but fortunately they're on Marvel Unlimited, so I can read them without spending $50. I don't think I would do that.
Yeah, and the Legion Lost books that I covered this issue were 4 through 9, so I'm almost done.
Okay.
The next book I'm going to talk about, I just read this morning. It's The Shadow by Howard Chaykin from 1986. It was very, very hard to get into this. The art art style is awesome. Like, I just didn't know what the hell was going on based on my little, very little of what I know about the Shadow. Like, I'm just dipping my toe in the Shadow now. And I didn't realize, like, he was, like, Doc Savage and he had, like, people that worked for him, you know, and did things. And the storyline is, like, somebody's trying to kill all the assistants of the Shadow, and you don't know why, but they are. And it mentions a little bit about telekinesis. And the Shadow can, like, he can sway minds, if you will. And there's this other character that might be linked to him that he seems really strange. He seems to own, like, sex shops and stuff like that. And he's able to, like, move his mind into another. He has, like, this dude that's a lot better. He's in a wheelchair, and he's got an oxygen tank and all that crap hooked up to him. And he, like, transports his body into this sexy dude and then has sex with all these women. But it's really strange. And I don't know if the Shadow's, like, old, because it's, like, the Shadow existed in the 40s or 50s, and now it's current time. And everybody's really old. So it's, like, not what I expected. It's not. It's like pulp characters in the current time. So I'm interested to see where it's going to go. The art and the paper are freaking awesome. I'm sure once I get into it, he just introduces, like, I think the problem with this issue number one that I had a problem with is it jumps around so much, introducing you to, like, 18 different characters. That he never establishes one of them. But we'll see where it goes in the next issue. I might end up loving the series. It's only four issues. It's a four-issue, like, mini.
And that was number one that you were...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had an ad for a book called Lords of the Ultra Realm. I've never, ever heard of that, which is a DC book. And
yeah.
I think it had, like, some of the books that were coming out during this time are, like, Vigilante number 29, Outsiders number 7, Omega Men number 38, Legion of Superheroes 22, Electric Warrior number 1, never read that, New Teen Titans number 20, Infinity Inc. number 26, DC Challenge number 7, and this book. And it's just like a checklist for all the deluxe book. This is one of those deluxe books. You know how Teen Titans was deluxe for a while and Infinity Inc. was deluxe? That means you could only buy them at a comic shop, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was definitely a time where there was direct-to-market only stuff.
So what I wanted when I picked this up was I wanted the Shadow in the 40s. And I got the Shadow in the 80s. And all the characters are old. But it does have an interesting premise. And I'm interested to see where it goes as I make my way through the series, hoping that I get to know some of the characters instead of being introduced to so many all at once. Very difficult first issue to, like, grasp what's going on.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, I read a couple more Wolverines. They're actually both done in ones. It was Wolverine 9 and 10, and 11 actually starts a new story, like a six-part storyline. But these are both different creative teams, but similar in some ways. Like Wolverine 9 is written by Peter David and has art by Gene Colan. And Colan actually, it almost seems like a purposeful choice. Because the issue is written like a horror movie. It's pretty much all a remembrance of Wolverine You know, in the present, he's still in Madripoor, but, you know, he's remembering back, and the whole issue is a remembrance of his, because, well, it's like a remembrance of his Weapon X days, and, we really don't see Wolverine himself full on until towards the end of the issue, and but it's kind of like a horror movie where the monster turns out to be the good guy, and you know Wolverine is in the place of the monster, and the people that are being pursued turn out to be the bad guys, and at first we don't really know who the men are. We know they're on the run from someone, and you know, Wolverine starts showing up and just threatening them and kind of scaring them, so we know that it's Wolverine that's pursuing them, but he's just you know, like sticking his claws through the door of where they're staying or things like that, eventually, it's down to just two of the guys are left, and one of the guys turns on the other, is about to shoot the other guy to kind of basically like turn him in, or you know, hoping that if he does Wolverine a favor of getting rid of the other guy, Wolverine will let him go. But you know, through the conversation of the men and some other means, we learn that these guys were all a part of a mercenary group that was hired to help storm a American base in Iraq, and Wolverine, when he was a part of Weapon X, was sent in by the Canadian government because there were some Canadians in the in the American base. One of the things that the men talk about and recollect, you know, they think that this circumstance might be part of the reason why they're being pursued, because they realize it was 5 years ago to the day. There was a woman in the camp that one of the men, like every day, he would line her up with a few other people and act as if they were going to execute them, like in firing line style. And every day, you know, their guns would not be loaded. So it was a matter of just, like, keeping her in fear. And then it's not explicitly stated, but alluded to that, that you know, him and the other men raped this woman and did a lot of horrible things to her. And it turns out that that woman was Canadian. She was actually a nun. And Wolverine, when he was sent in, he discovered her as she was dying. He states to the last man before killing him that, you know, he made a promise to this woman who at one point was a person of forgiveness, and the horrors that they had put her through were so bad that they had stolen that ability to forgive from her, and he couldn't forgive them for that. It kind of had a neat ending, because it's like a monologue from Wolverine talking about how innocence is really one of the only things in life that he values, because it's so hard to have. So it's a pretty somber issue, but it was interesting kind of twist on what starts out sort of having the tone of a horror movie. Wolverine 10, again, is a flashback issue, but this time it's back to Claremont and Buscema. This time it's like half flashback, half in the present in Madripoor, and this concerns Wolverine remembering back to another time when it was almost his birthday, and this is back before, actually before the Weapon X days, and he has no adamantium at this point, and he's pretty young and inexperienced and like wild. And he had a relationship with this Native American woman named Silver Fox. And when the issue starts, he's carrying her dead body and confronting Sabretooth from killing her. And basically, implication is Sabretooth just killed her to fuck with Wolverine. And so the flashbacks generally are just this, like, drag-out battle between Wolverine and Sabretooth in the snow, where Sabretooth at this point is a lot more experienced than Wolverine. Wolverine is really not in like a, it's not really a smart thing for him to go up against Sabretooth, but he's just pure, you know, berserker mode because of his lover being killed. And in the present, Wolverine's, you know, Patch in Madripoor, and he's getting a reputation for cleaning up and causing problems in the, like, crime-ridden part of town. So he's got men after him that are sick of his shit, basically. And the issue ends with... So some of these guys that are pursuing him are taken out, and Wolverine thinks that, you know, Jessica Drew helped him out and took them out, and she thought that Wolverine took him out, so neither of them took him out. And then Wolverine gets back to, like, the bar where he's kind of staying, and the men are, like, hanging, are dead and are hanging in this, like, closet or against the wall or something like that, and they have a note on them saying happy birthday, no one else gets to kill you but me or something like that. And obviously, like, based on the flashbacks throughout the issue, it's was Sabretooth that showed up and killed the men and left them as a birthday present. But one little thing I thought was kind of interesting in terms of continuity was that Wolverine very explicitly says that, you know, not only does he not have adamantium in his on his skeleton back when he's fighting Sabretooth, but he also has no claws. And that's kind of been something I believe that's been changed.
Yeah,
that, you know, he had. So this was back when he was considered to not have had claws at all until, and that his claws were total adamantium, rather than bone covered in adamantium. But
that book is listed as expensive too.
Yeah, I thought that this one probably had a pretty.
$27.
Yeah, since it's kind of an early
in the
whole Sabretooth thing.
If we drop it down to fine. $9.50.
Mm-hmm.
First appearance of Silver Fox and Vol. Don't know either of those.
What'd you say, Vol?
V-O-L-E.
That must have been one of the people involved in the Madripoor business. But, some of these early Wolverine issues were pretty... are still pretty valuable.
Last Claremont issue.
Yeah, so like I said, Wolverine 9 was written by Peter David, and then he writes this upcoming six-part story. So, and Sal Buscema is still on the book for a little while, though, and then some of the stuff my buddy and I got like in back issues and read, but when I was actually... it was a little further on when we actually started buying them off the racks. And I think it was might have been Silvestri that was doing the art by then.
Yeah, they've had the John Byrne. It seems pretty interesting. There's John Byrne issues coming up, and Barry Kitson, Mark Silvestri, Kubert. Mark Teixeira, I remember some of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big name artists.
Yeah, his first solo series was really good for a while.
And then the surprising one, at least that I didn't know he was around this long, I guess, is Leno Francis Yu. Started in issue 113. I didn't realize how much Larry Hama wrote it, too.
Yeah, that's right. That has to be some of the earliest Larry Hama I read.
Cool.
But, yeah.
It's amazing how much Marvel I don't have. It's like I dip my toe in, and when I drop stuff, I drop it Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Well, like we were saying earlier, I mean, for you, like, there's always going to be that connection to DC, you know?
Yeah, I just thought these John Byrne covers look awesome. Well, I'm a John Byrne fan. And yeah. I didn't realize he had like, 8 issues or so of Wolverine art.
Yeah, some of the earliest comics I had John Byrne art, and those really, and I also, you know, like I said, I had some classic X-Men reprints of his X-Men stuff, and I was just always so blown away by John Bernard.
Yeah.
Thought it was like just fantastic.
I gotta try to sell that stuff for my brother before the movie, because that's probably peak season. I gotta get off my ass and put it on eBay.
Yeah, what was it, the old Wolverines you said?
Yeah, he has like Wolverine, this series right here, 1 through, I don't know, 20 or so. But now that I see these John Byrne issues, I might buy them, but just the issues that I really want. And then he has the original Chris Claremont, Frank Miller 4-issue run.
Nice.
Which that one goes for a pretty penny. Like,
yeah.
You have to at least spend 40 to 60 bucks getting issue 1.
Yeah, that's...
And then it goes down from there, like 1, 2, it'll be like 20, and then 15 and 10 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those have definitely kept their value.
That's what hooked me on Wolverine, but for some reason when he became Patch, I just didn't follow him. And X-Men is... I've always... I don't know how I felt about him. Like, I read him right now, and I really, really like him. But when you were reading X-Men and liking it, I wasn't. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it wasn't good. I just didn't want to read Wolverine, I guess, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I'm surprised how well it holds up, you know. And I'm surprised that I think we were just so obsessed with Wolverine, you know. And to me, it didn't even matter that he wasn't in his costume, you know, because these issues are pretty adult, not in terms of like R-rated content or anything, just but more it's pretty mature storytelling, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it was Wolverine kind of gave me in on my interests, because they weren't very superhero-y, and a lot of the stuff I was reading and attracted to was pretty superhero-y. And the early X-Men stuff that I read that was written by Jim Lee, early on, it was still when Claremont had a lot of control, and then being that I was focused on art, you know, I didn't mind so much when Jim Lee kind of took things over. But going back, you know, you can see the story kind of suffered.
Yeah.
But didn't really care about that at the time. I was all pumped when X-Men number 1 came out. I tried to get like every version of the cover.
Yeah.
I think I only ended up with like 2.
So you want to jump into the Kirby stuff? Hello?
This time, started out with an issue of Mr. Miracle.
Which was my favorite.
Yeah, let me see here. What number was it? Number seven.
Seven.
Yeah.
I love Big Barda. I just like... My love for her grows every issue.
Gets deeper and deeper.
Yeah. And is this the first appearance of Kanto? Or have we seen him before? The Master Assassin. That was a weird exchange of dialogue between him and Mr. Miracle. I want to talk about that because it was a little confusing to me what was happening. But the scene opens up, and the first few issues are just to give you a sense of what it's like to be bussed. Like, it's like a Nazi camp, right? And you're a Jew or something, and you get bussed into the Apocalyptian. As a kid, it looks like you get off of the train and you're beat to death, and you have to stay in line, and they turn you into these soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And harassers, that these guys are called. So it's just giving you a sense of helplessness if you're bussed there.
Yeah.
And Granny's kind of like, well, it used to be big on my list of officers, and I broke you down to this level because scot-free escaped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these young men come in as worms. She says you'll become a rat, then a wolf, and if you're lucky, you'll end up one of my fine young tigers. But this is essentially Mr. Miracle and Big Barda's return to Apocalypse. And I really like that as they're departing, we see that that Barda and Oberon have established a relationship, even though they started off on the wrong foot.
That was awesome, that exchange, because it was like... It was like, get out, you little sawed-off drip. And then he, like, gives her shit, and then they hug.
Yeah, they still, like, antagonize each other, but it's more loving. And, yeah, they hug, and you could tell that they've, that she's, well, she especially has come around on him in the time that she's been there, so... But Big Bard is, Oberon's going to be left behind. He's not happy to see them go. He's pretty concerned about them. But yeah, like you said, they get to Apocalypse by using the Mega Rod to teleport. And Barda tries to use the fact that she's still wearing, she's wearing her uniform to try to avoid battle with some soldiers that they encounter right away. It doesn't work, so they have to fight them in. But this has the benefit of giving them transport, because they're actually able to take over the soldiers' Magna Car. But like you said, it looks like they've materialized kind of outside of where they need to get to, so they have to do some traveling. And as you mentioned, as they're on the road, they encounter a man named Kanto, which I do think this is his first appearance. He's a master of assassin of sorts, and has I get the impression that he's kind of been, he's been kind of given this area to rule over, but he's put off on the outskirts of the main action.
Yeah, he seems really like, I don't know, it's like Mr. Miracle has dialogue with him, and he just like, okay, I'll let you go, kind of thing. It's really bizarre. But he's Kanto the Weapon Master. He's an assassin, and he like knew how to use Barda's Mega Rod right off the bat. He takes out Big Barda pretty damn quick by separating her from her Mega Rod and blasting her right away. And then he has his men take out Mr. Miracle, and they strap him to a target practice device, and they get these like science fiction arrows and shoot him at him and purposely miss. And he uses, obviously, something in his costume to it's like something that comes out of his shoe to, like, make this balloon that, this huge cushion that allows him to survive the blast. Knocks out Kanto, and then they, like, drag him on these, like, air cycles. And then they have that weird conversation like you were talking about. It's like, he just bowed, like, it's like a level of respect kind of bow, like,
right.
I'll meet you again and go ahead and do your thing, because Mr. Miracle kind of says, I hope you're bored with trying to kill me, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and he starts making fun of his domain, and Kanto, it looks like he realizes that he's not where he wants to be in life.
Yeah, that's kind of the interpretation I got. As Mr. Miracle is a student of traps and escaping traps, you know, Kanto is a artist of weaponry and of all kinds, and he says, you know, he makes a statement that he's content where he's at, even though he'd rather be closer to Darkseid and in the inner circle. And Mr. Miracle challenges him on that and says, you know, my bruises say you're bored here. In other words, if you're so happy, then why have you been taking time to entertain yourself by trying out your weaponry on me and stuff like that? I don't think you're as content as you say you are. And, you know, it's almost as if Kanto says, fine, you'd probably be have an easier death if I were to kill you, but if you want to risk the being tortured by Granny Goodness, then get out of here before I change my mind, kind of thing.
Yeah, I like how that one harasser reports to Granny Goodness. God, Granny Goodness is ugly. But she's like in her like bedroom gown.
And like, you gotta love it.
Pink nightgown. Drinking, eating breakfast or lunch or bedtime, whatever she's eating. And her guard calls her, you know, we got Scott Free. You need to come along.
She pretty much threw that pink nightgown on over the uniform she was wearing earlier, because she's still got the
battle armor. Yeah,
battle armor. She's got the boots on. She's got her boots on. And she's got the, you know, like that green scaly armor.
Yeah, just like Barda has.
Yeah, so that's pretty funny.
So it sounds like they're gonna send Barda to the female barracks with the female Furies, and they're sending Scott to this thing called Section Zero, where nobody ever comes out alive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this creature in there called the Lump.
Yeah,
it's colored exactly like her outfit.
You know what I started singing as when I got to the end of this issue?
She's Lump. She's Lump.
She's Lump. She's Lump. She's in my head.
And we get a cool Scott Free backup that just shows him how his like first encounter with parademons and his arrow, what are they called? Arrow discs.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's almost like they trained by putting the like Granny Goodness's soldiers up against the parademons. Like, was one of the ways that they learned. So it's kind of neat to see that. And he's in his Granny Goodness like blue and yellow outfit that reminds me of like swimming gear, like those caps they wear look like the caps that Olympic swimmers wear.
So that leads us into Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen number 147.
Yes.
Which was pretty cool story. This one jumped more from a focus to the Newsboy Legion to a focus on Superman.
Yeah.
And Superman ends up getting into a boom tube all the way to New Genesis. Originally, you think it might be Apocalypse, but it's New Genesis and Supertown. And
yeah, last time he was investigating those tunnels and found the boom tube down there, and he thinks that, you know, he encounters a guy named Magnar, and they mistake each other for, they both think that the other is someone from Apocalypse, when in fact Magnar is from New Genesis, and of course we all know who Superman is. But before that, we do get a little bit of follow-up on Jimmy Olsen and the Newsboy Legion, and they've kind of recovered from their mishaps. Jimmy's in a hospital bed, but he doesn't look like a caveman anymore. And
everybody's regular size.
Yeah, everyone's back to normal size. And the best thing is that the Newsboy Legion have taken on a pet, one of the monsters from the evil factory that survived, Angry Charlie.
He's awesome. I love how, like, Gabby just is like, oh, he likes to eat furniture. And then he, like, pulls out his pockets of pills to knock him out.
Yeah.
His tranquilizers.
Charlie's wild about chairs. I think it's Big Word says that the local medics think he likes the chemicals that are used in furniture manufacturing. But, Scrapper is basically his master. And, Angry Charlie, he's like this big pink being with a huge mouth and bright yellow eyes and yellow horns. Really wild looking. But, yeah, those pills that Scrapper has are like, they look like Chiclets.
I thought he was going to give him bubble gum. That's what I thought initially.
Yeah, but that basically puts Charlie to sleep. So Charlie's a pretty cool pet.
And then they're really excited to go back to where they came from because they want to get the hell out of Scotland or Ireland or wherever the hell they're at.
Yeah. Yeah, so long, Scotland. Don't think we didn't have a great time because we didn't.
Yeah, we didn't.
And they've got Charlie's still knocked out, and so they strapped him to the back of the whiz wagon. But he wakes up and kind of freaks out and causes them to crash, and they start spiraling downward towards a volcano beneath them.
Yeah, I tend to. In this, the storylines, I tend to like the Newsboy Legion stuff a little more than the Superman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the characterization of that and the craziness of it.
Yeah, they're really entertaining characters.
Where, like you said, Superman in this book is the straight man, so...
Yeah.
He's, his story in this book is pretty much straightforward. He ends up on New Genesis, and he just realizes that everybody there has powers, and when he tries to save somebody, he's really not saving them, but he's interrupting their practice and stuff.
Yeah, he keeps making mistakes. That's kind of the gist of his whole thing. But whereas the Jimmy and the Newsboys wake up after being taken out by some robots that appear at the top of the volcano, and they wake up in these green robes at a dinner table, and there's a man there who fills up a goblet with fire and drinks the fire, and we get yet another first appearance. This time it's Victor Volcano.
Yeah, I don't ever remember ever seeing him ever again.
You know what? I was really... Or Victor Volcano. That's what I said. He's got a sky gondola that floats above the volcano and retracts down into it.
He's 8 foot tall.
Yeah, he's really tall, and I was curious about him. I looked him up on comic book database, and there was actually a Superboy story in the 90s, like a three-part story where he reappeared as the villain.
Nice.
That was the first time he was used again, and then he was in one issue of the Jimmy Olsen Countdown special 4 or 5 years ago.
I read that, and I don't remember him.
It actually, and you know what, I just look, and looking at the cover, it actually has Angry Charlie on the cover.
I do like Angry Charlie. It's like it's like an awesome dog or something that you keep as a pet.
Yeah. But like Victor Volcano explains that, you know, his ambition is to become the king of the earth. And I like a big word says, that's the kind of premise sold in Golden Age comics. Like, don't you know what age of comic books you're in, Victor?
Yeah, and then, like I said, Superman messes up a couple of things. One girl is using, like, her powers to juggle something, and he interrupts it using his powers to hold it, and she's like, hey, I was just practicing. And she's, like, spinning this megaton thing. And then he runs into this, like, it looks like a metallic ape. And the ape looks like it attacks him because a fist just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Then some guy's like, what are you doing to my protonoid? You know, like, the protonoid, I guess, is like a robot that helps you move stuff. And he interrupts that. And then he just has a quick lesson in life from High Father, like, hey, I should feel like I belong here, but I feel really out of place. And they agree that he needs to be on Earth helping his friends, and he actually gets ported down where the Newsboy Legion is, and then gets crushed by two rocks.
Yeah, I think that was probably my favorite part of Superman's story was just seeing him
crushed by two rocks.
No, seeing him interact with High Father.
Yeah,
it was cool to see the two of them together, just kind of chilling on a bench together. But yeah, he sends him, and we got our characters kind of. It's been a while; they've been dispersed. They're sort of all finally all back together. Superman, Jimmy, and the Newsboy.
Yeah,
for next time. Unless, of course, Superman gets crushed and never appears in comics again.
Yeah, that's true. Don't miss it.
Yeah.
I think we're getting close to the end of Forever, people. I don't think there's many more issues. And this issue kind of feels weird because we were like in a story arc that was very much linear, like every issue led to the next one, and while this still has some of it, it's them coming out of their thing where High Father saved them, and they're all back together except for Seferin, and he actually shows up. Seraphim shows up later, but they have Master Bates.
Yeah,
billion
Mr. Bates.
I love his name. What is it called? Billionaire. What is his name? Billion Dollar Bates.
Yeah, Billion Dollar Bates.
So it's like this reminded me of The Toy with Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
there was a Master Bates in there too. And
there's a Mr. Bates in Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
That's why I posted a picture yesterday of from this, and
you're getting sucked into that stuff, huh?
Oh, I've always watched Downton Abbey. it's a good. Karen and I watch it, but it's a good couple show because I like. Like Keith said, I like the history, the historical setting it takes place in.
Yeah.
There's been some, especially like this last season, the way it ended, there was some ridiculous shit, but But it's got some pretty good historical stuff to it.
Retro.
Yep. But yeah, this Mr. Bates, he's got this mansion or whatever, but down below it there's this group of cultists called the Sect, and they wear these blue robes and have these big pink weird masks that look like I don't know what how you describe them, almost like big anteater faces. But he sort of has also, there's also kind of like a militia that he employs, security force around his complex, and the Forever People materialize right near a bunch of them, and it leads to an altercation, which is kind of funny because Big Bear is pretty invulnerable, so they keep trying to take him out to little effect, even like shooting him point blank. He just like picks up their transport vehicle and throws it at them. And finally we get another reunion where Seraphine is able to connect back up with his buddies, bringing the mother box with them. And they're happy to see each other, of course. And that's when they first communicate with Billion Dollar Bates.
And he can, like, control people. Like, he could control their bodies and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. It sounds like there was, like, a group of people, much like this group of people reminded me of the group of people that were helping out Orion.
Right, yeah.
They kind of reminded me, and one of the guys looked very similar, but they're a different group of people that were sent undercover to try to take out Billion Dollar Bates, but he can mind control, and he's using them as puppets and playing around with them. And he even calls them puppets, for that matter. And then he shows them the new gods, and it's a weird thing, but between the Sect and like his militia, because it seems like they're working together, but the Sect is working on taking out his militia. So that was a little confusing for me. But yeah, they have everything under control, and you see like this weird being, and that being turns it. The big twist to this story is once he puts on his headgear, it's like Desaad shows up, and you're like, "Well, okay." He takes off his mask, if you will, and it's Desaad, and you know that Darkseid is very near.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason like there's kind of a connection. The people that went there to investigate it seem to suspect that something that Mr. Bates is up to, some serious dark stuff, and you know, wonder how he's amassed the power that he's, you know, that he has, and that his abilities to control people turn out to be, you know, the fact that he's kind of locked into having the anti-life equation.
Yeah, and there's your link. That's why they're right there.
So, you know, he doesn't really understand the power that he has, other than he understands what he can do with it, but he's connected to this Sect for the sake of power, but you know, he unbeknownst to him, you know, because of the anti-life equation that he has, that's why Darkseid and Desaad have come here and are posing as members of the Sect. And so I guess it would be, yeah, Desaad is the one, maybe either the dark side, that puts this helmet called the Stimulus Hat on him.
Beautiful Dreamer manipulates it to make to make it look like he gets away from them, because they're going to obviously take him out. Darkseid wants him, but then Beautiful Dreamer makes it look like he gets away or flies away.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't fly away. He's there, but it was kind of cool here. The one thing I did like is this the first time that Darkseid thought that these guys posed any kind of danger to him.
Yeah.
Because Moon Rider was going to touch him with the Megaton touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of tricks them. He delays them by intimidating them. Sort of shouting at them and, using authority, saying, he may be from Apocalypse, but he's the equal of Highfather, and they have no right to underestimate him. And, by the time they really kind of get their bearings, that gives him, a chance to escape. But, they also, fortunately, are able to foil Darkseid's plan to get the anti-life equation from Bates. But once again, and Dark Desaad kind of calls him on it, instead of straight out destroying the Forever People, he mostly just sends them away. And the people that were there that Bates had been controlling are, like, returned to their senses. But, it's a interesting encounter, between the Forever People and Darkseid, to see them run into each other. And, Darkseid is shorter than Big Bear, but he reaches by a little bit, but he reaches up and, like, squeezes his nose.
Yeah, like, honk, honk.
Yeah. But, that's interesting.
It's a done in one issue.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just the overall backstory of them opposing each other ultimately, but
I liked it the least of the three. I always liked the Superman mostly because of, man, the Newsboy Legion's entertaining as hell.
Mm-hmm. But I think this issue is pretty strong compared to some of the recent ones we've had.
Yeah, it's a strong issue. But Mr. Miracle is by far my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's because I'm biased, and anytime Big Barda says anything, I'm like in love. It's amazing.
So yeah, next time we got New Gods 8, Jimmy Olsen 148, and Mr. Miracle 8. For next time. Moving along to volume 3 here.
Yeah, we're getting close to volume 4.
Yeah, we're rolling around. rolling along. We have probably another 3 episodes in this volume. It looks like we have about 9 issues left, and then I know a decent chunk of volume 4 is the graphic novel that he went back and did later on.
The Hunger Dogs?
Hunger Dogs, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, enjoyable as usual. I haven't felt my interest wane. In some ways, it's probably like spreading them out like this maintains anticipation and keeps me from burning out on it,
Yeah.
And
makes me almost want to explore, like, what if I read Mr. Miracle back to back?
Sort of interpacing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was. I forgot to write down the issue. 147. The other ones are easy to remember because they're always moving along.
Mm-hmm.
It's like New 52.
Yeah, they're in sync with each other.
Yeah, they're in sync. 21's 21, you know. Mm-hmm. You just bump the number up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are we done, or do you got anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that could wrap it up for this time.
So it looks highly likely that you're going to go to Baltimore?
Yeah. I think we're just finalizing some details, but and just double checking a few things, but I think almost definitely, I think Kara's going to come with me.
Cool deal.
Yeah. I think we'll probably be, are you staying at the Sheraton again?
Yeah. We did book our room, but we haven't booked our flight yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the room is the more pressing thing to get as far as it filling up, you know. With flights, people are coming from different directions.
Right.
So
this has been number 15. Man, did you get me all confused again? This has been 15. Retrocast, yeah. 15. And you can reach us at Geek Brunch Podcast on Facebook and click the like button. You can reach us at Forum for Geeks. I have been lazy about posting the notes there, but I'll try to get better. And the other location is obviously the website, geekbrunchpodcast.com. And in there you'll see Geek Brunch and Geek Brunch Retrocast. You can reach me at on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. And Chris at MythMakingETC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as don't feel too bad about the forums, because they've been down since yesterday sometime anyways. I just checked, they're still down, so.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to, like, I'm worried if I lose the forum that I'll lose the tracking of my issues. So when it does come back up, I got to get it off my ass and back all that stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where I keep it, so I can, you know, look at the whole year and say, this is all I've read, and I have my totals and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that for many reasons, and mm-hmm. I don't want to lose it. Because on the other forum, I lost a lot of metadata that there's like one or two threads that I was like storing stuff, like historical stuff, and I lost it all. Yeah. When the other forums went down, and I was like, damn.
You know what I've liked using for quite a while now is Google Docs. You know, you can just tie it into your, if you have a Gmail account, and there's even now a Google Docs app for the iPhone that you can access your information, but it's like you can, anywhere you have an internet connection, you can access it.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look into it.
Yeah, like it's kind of like Microsoft Office, but on the internet. And I've used that for quite a while to store, like, writing and, like, just information, like you're talking about, like, stuff I've read and things like that. And, you know, it's just kind of nice because then I don't have to worry about losing it if, like, my computer crashed or something.
Right.
So you always just, like, create a Word document, or not Word, but you could create a document in there and just copy and paste it into there every time, you know, something.
And also, please leave an iTunes review. We could use some more iTunes reviews.
Yes.
And maybe next time I will... Well, I want to finish Legion. I want to finish Legion Lost.
Yeah.
I got to get that one done, and then I don't know what I'm going to move into, but... I have so much stuff now, like so much old stuff that
yeah.
I almost want to get into like Jack Kirby Thor, like
mm-hmm.
just because it's so, they said, you know, you're saying it's so similar. Like I want to get into that and reread it and see if I see similarities, like it jumping over to DC.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything
There's
else
a
you
lot
want
to
that?
choose from.
Anything else you want to mention? Are you in any other podcasts, like your myth making or any other stuff going on?
Not much new recently. I may have some stuff coming up, but I'll probably record again in time to mention anything else that comes up.
Cool deal.
So, all right, it was good talking to you. With only 2 weeks gone by.
Yeah.
So.
And the con season's kind of over, so I'm back to normal at least after this week. I do have Thursday off, so I might get a lot more reading done, hopefully.
Oh, nice.
I was going to go visit my brother, but he's going to be out of town, so that kind of changed my plans.
Yeah, you can start catching up on...
I know Barb has yard reading for me to do, so I'll be doing that, but I will be reading a lot of stuff. I acquired so many books that, man, I need to get some of it read.
Yeah, you gotta dig in and start catching up on some stuff after going to so many cons in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing a lot of reading after I had a lot of stuff accumulate because I wasn't reading that much for a couple of months, and then so I have a huge stack, and so I've been reading.
What have you been reading? Like current stuff or like?
A lot of current stuff, a lot of Marvel stuff. Not current as in like last month, but like a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm like working on catching up on some Marvel stuff, and I got a bunch of Valiant and like Image stuff to catch up on. I got a lot of new stuff to. I got a huge to read pile right now.
Yeah, I read some really good, really good books that surprised me. One of them was that Wild Blue Yonder. That was really good. I liked it a lot. I like post-apocalyptic, and I like the way they told that story. And then
I saw you mention that, and I didn't realize there was any, like, what you said about it made it sound more interesting, because I guess I either didn't look closely enough or just skipped over it or something. Didn't realize it was post-apocalyptic or anything.
Yeah, it's like everything on the ground is, like, totally waste, like, burned up and radiation and polluted, and the only way you could really survive is in the air. But there's like a monarch in the air that controls the airspace, and then there's rebels. It's got like a Star Wars type feel to it, and it's pretty cool because they have this one female fighter pilot that protects this like rebellion plane, and she just recently lost a gunner, so she had to recruit a gunner. And they have these dudes on rocket packs, like the Rocketeer, that actually can attack ships. That's pretty awesome. I like it.
Yeah, that is cool.
And then the other one was Captain Midnight. That was like very pulpish. It's like a character in the 40s that gets caught in the Bermuda Triangle and comes back to the present day. And when he was following a Nazi spy plane. So that looks to be really, really good. And I really like the execution on that. And then Breath of Bones was freaking awesome with Dave Wachter and Steve Niles, but I'm a Steve Niles fan. I really want a comic book, like an ongoing comic that takes place in World War II, like military book.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a hard market for it, but man, there's really nothing in that genre. And that everything cool. that they have tried, they try to take the military into current time.
Right.
Like, they try to make it Sergeant Rock's great-great-great-grandson or something like that. And then they try to make Unknown Soldier in current time. But, man, I would like a book that takes place, you know, World War II. I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I wonder if it's kind of falling in between people's interests, because the people that remember the old stuff aren't really interested in it being set in modern day, and then the people that don't remember the old stuff just aren't, you know, interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're making it take place in present day or tying it into some kind of other thing, and not really working for the people that they're trying to make it appeal to, and it's also turning off the people that remember it.
Yeah,
remember the old stuff.
Breath of Bones is like World War II, and it's like three generations of, you know, a father, a son, and a grandfather. And the father goes off to war, and he's not going to come back. He's going to die. And they know the Nazis are coming close, so the grandfather basically pulls out a box and says, this has been in our family for years, and it's a golem. And he says, we use it. So he says, sometimes we have to use monsters to stop monsters. And it's just awesome. And the dialogue and art is just freaking phenomenal. I wish that was like a more ongoing, but it's only three issues. But cool. I will talk to you soon, and we'll see if maybe we can get Chuck on next time. I know he's in North Carolina. I think he's in Charlotte. Yeah, he's so maybe he has more. I don't know what he has planned for the weekends, but maybe we could. We can see if he wants to do a Brave and the Bold or something. Or yeah, if he has access to any of that. I'll have to get in touch with him and see if he's available.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I know he's going to spend there like a while there. Like it's over a month.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, have a good week and have a good holiday.
All right, you too. Do you have Thursday and Friday off, or just Thursday?
Yeah, I'm off. Looking forward to it. It's a good time for a break.
Do you have Friday off too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good deal. See, I only have Thursday off.
I mean, I had to take it off, but.
I may take it off. Like I put in the request. Mm-hmm. Because nobody's gonna be there. Like, I think. I'm going to be there and maybe one other person, but mm-hmm. that might be the reason why I have to be there.
Right.
But
yeah.
if there's not a lot of work, I'm definitely going to take off, but that means I have to be like Superman Monday through Wednesday.
Yeah.
Either that or work 12 hours and have to work extra hard. Cause it's,
yeah,
I have 40 hours worth of work. I'd have to try to cram in 3 days.
Right. Yeah, so sometimes it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, do I kill myself and try, or do I just suck it up and go on a Friday?
Yeah.
All right, well, you have a good one, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, man. You too.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.